All right, let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. And they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code BROS. Tried a bunch of their gummies myself, and it's wild how different each one feels. They're sleepy time gummies. Knock me out in about 15 minutes flat. No hangovers, no grogginess. I wake up feeling amazing the next day. And their epic euphoria gummies, well, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your shitty mood. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere else, for that matter. And they've got gummies for literally everything. Immune supports, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS. And they can ship to almost every single state in the United States of America. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off with their first order with code BROS. So head on over to Mood.com. Browse their amazing selection of functional gummies and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use the promo code BROS at checkout to save 20% off your first order. Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get, well, not that good at it. You could do about half of your New Year's resolutions. You could, I don't know, join a CrossFit gym or something like that. Or you can start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. So, man, if you're out there and you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your own home. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work all from the comfort of your couch. Choose from personalized, chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find out which one works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. So there is no uncomfortable doctor visits. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if a treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/drinkingbros. That's Hims.com/drinkingbros for your personalized hair loss options. Hims.com/drinkingbros.
Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Shop OmahaSteaks.com. Give Dad the legendary Heartland quality he deserves for Father's Day. Plus, our listeners get $35 off with the promo code DRINKINGBROS at checkout. When it comes to Father's Day, some things never change. Dads want steak. Yes, I do. A recent survey shows 75% of Americans agree there's no better way to spend Father's Day than grilling with the family. I agree. I love nothing more than hanging out with the fam, going to the pool, drinking, and having some great meats. Omaha Steaks is the best in the biz. Also love their burgers as well. Talked about those a couple weeks ago on here with the burgers. Those smash burgers, man, they're phenomenal. They're pre-packaged, pre-smashed, all that other stuff. And I know you're saying to yourself, well, what's the difference? It's just a patty or whatever. It's not. They're caramelized and seared and all that other fun stuff there. And it literally goes from freezer to bun in 5 minutes. And that's the truth. Anybody out there who's got kids who tear through these things and then you want to make them real quickly and everything else, my wife was able to dial these in and rip through a whole package of, I think it was 16 free is what we got in the last box.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, they're phenomenal. Omaha Steaks has been America's original butcher since 1917, family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. They also carry mouth-watering burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, desserts, and easy-to-prepare comfort food. This Father's Day, give Dad the world's best steak experience with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for guaranteed perfect gifts that deliver legendary quality, and for an extra $35 off, use promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, and you're going to get an extra $35 off with the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. Head on over to that site, man. You can get lost in there, by the way. Bob, is that it up there?
Yeah.
What else do they have? I ordered burgers and steak last time.
I'm messing around with their seafood section here. They got lobster, shrimp, freaking crab.
Do they really?
Yeah, dude.
I haven't ordered that. I haven't ordered that yet. All right.
King crab legs, jumbo lump crab meat if you don't feel like cracking it open.
Yeah, let's go. Okay. I was unaware of that game.
Look at these thick puppies.
Yeah. I was just a steak boy and everything else. I didn't want to say, hey, wife, cook me a lobster for dinner, like Henry VIII or something like that. But I will now. Shit, if they can just drop it off at the house, that'd be great. I didn't want to go to the fucking grocery store and get it, which is exactly what Omaha Steaks does. They just drop it off right at your doorstep.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase plus a free 4-year warranty. That's tonal.com for $500 off plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Welcome to Drinking Bros Podcast, kids. We got a rapper on the show today. Podcaster, an author, a pioneer, if you will, a record setter, a
record holder.
Record holder, yeah. record setter. Zuby's here today. I was going to give your last name a shot, and I said that like 10 minutes before we got on the air, and then I abandoned that.
Oh, it's a Desway, but
is it?
Yeah, but you'll never be able to pronounce. You're the dumbest at names of all time.
Correct.
Like, we had Matthew McConaughey on here, and you called him McConaughey like 65 times, even though at right at the beginning of the show, it told you how to pronounce it.
To be fair, though, again, I did call him that to his face when I knew him, and he never corrected me. Therefore, I was like, oh, well, I must be doing it right. And then after that, you know.
This sounds a lot like victim blaming to me.
I'm the victim in this one. He didn't correct me. At least with Zuby, I asked, and you were like, no, man, it's cool. Everybody calls me Zuby. You don't have to get my last name right. And I'm like, no, I want to give it a shot. And then I abandoned it because of the McConaughey thing. Welcome to the show, my man.
Fair enough.
No doubt, man. Happy to be here. How you guys doing?
Really good, man. I know you're probably sick of talking about this, so we'll just kind of gloss over it here. But you gained like worldwide fame, essentially, from a simple sketch you did where you identified as a female and then you power lifted, 600 pounds and said, I've broken the world record and that's because I identify as a female. So now I hold the title.
Yeah, it's funny because it wasn't even a sketch. It was just a clip from one of my random training sessions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kept seeing all these stories coming out of biological males destroying women in various sports over the years. And there was one day where I sort of saw three in one day. And out of curiosity, I just thought, I wonder what I'm good at deadlifting. I wonder what the British women's deadlift record is. And I looked it up and realized that I could shatter it. And in fact, I had a video, on my phone of me lifting more than that. That was just on my phone. So I just took that, little clip, uploaded it to Twitter, and wrote a caption like, I keep hearing about how biological men have no strength advantage over women in 2019. So watch me destroy the British women's deadlift record without trying. P.S. I identified as a woman while lifting the weight. Don't be a bigot. So I just posted that up. I had 18,000 followers at the time. I just thought it was something that, you know, I thought it was funny. So I thought, okay, this will probably get, you know, maybe a couple of hundred likes and some shares. And lo and behold, this was a transformative moment in my life and my career. Within a couple of hours, the video had hit 100,000 views. And then by the time I went to bed that night, I think it had hit 500,000 views. Mm-hmm. I woke up in the morning, it was up to 700 and something. It just kept going and going for days. This thing was just going viral. I started getting big media outlets reaching out to me, BBC, Sky News, the Sunday Times, all these radio stations and stuff wanted to talk to me. And it started. And then about 2 weeks after I posted it, I wake up in the morning one day and I've got all these DMs and emails and messages, people going, yo, Joe Rogan just mentioned you on his podcast. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, what do you mean? And then I go check out his latest episode with Brian Callen, and they spend a couple minutes talking about this this deadlift stunt. And so things just go and grow. And yeah, I mean, it was sort of the catalyst that introduced a lot of people to me. But then with everything else I do, of course, with my music and my podcasting and all my other work and the other content I put out there, people realize quickly, like, oh, okay, this, you know, this isn't just a one-off. This guy's actually interesting. Right. So
yeah,
tweets go viral all the time. But in my case, I myself kind of went viral, and, you know, I gained immediately from that. You know, maybe that tweet itself took me up to around 50,000 followers on Twitter, you know, maybe took me from 18 to 50,000, but then the ball just kept rolling. I mean, as we record this now, I'm on, you know, 325,000, and everything has just grown and grown. I ended up going on the Joe Rogan podcast, spending 11 weeks out in the USA, getting invited onto all these big programs, Tucker Carlson, Ben Shapiro, Joe Rogan, Glenn Beck, you know, just traveling all over the US, going to all these different states, different cities. And it was just love everywhere, man. It was just love everywhere. And ever since that moment, things have been different.
Yeah, because I remember watching you on Joe Rogan. And the funny thing is I caught the interview midway through, because I'm a big fan of watching the video version of it, right? Not so much the audio, because when there's interesting people, I like to see their facial reactions to certain questions and everything else. So I just thought you were like a normal, well-spoken dude who was, you know, this little thing had clicked and whatever. I didn't know that all of this overnight success was because of this little clip, and not vice versa, that you were just this massive personality already. And I guess that's the beauty of the internet, right?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I mean, to clarify, I mean, you know, I've put out my first album in 2006. So by the time this happens, I've already got 8 albums and EPs out there. I've already sold tens of thousands of albums. I've built my audience up to a certain level. It's just that this was a spark that led people to discover all of that, right? It put me on all these people's radars. So, you know, I already had my audience in the tens of thousands, but this put it up to the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. Certainly, I mean, that video itself has got million, you know, well, I don't even know how many. Just on Twitter, it's 3 million plus views. I don't know how much everywhere else. But yeah, you know, that's really just opened me up to a whole wider audience, loads of people in the States. I mean, my US audience is now bigger than my UK audience. At the time I tweeted that, I was far better known in the UK than I was in the US. But now, you know, I've got a large American audience. So it certainly wasn't far from an overnight success. You know, it's sort of the culmination of, 12, 13 years of work. And then that flashpoint being the catalyst for discovery. That's probably how I describe it.
Of course. But it is one of those things where you're like, God, I bet you were sitting there going, God damn it, man. I've been working my ass off for years, and all I had to do was put up a 6-second video. Again, when I was talking about the beauty of the internet, for somebody like you, who is talented, who's a talented dude, not only as a rapper, but as an author, and I enjoy your podcast as well. It can help, right? Versus you see somebody like a Chewbacca mom where they have this video that goes viral and then it's like, all right, sweet, we want you to be on the carpet of the Grammys wearing the Chewbacca mom mask and then talking to people like that. And you're like, oh, well, there's no substance to go with this person and it'll just kind of go away in 30 or 40 days. And that's kind of it. For you, it was a lot different because it exposed people to your music and who you were and all these things that you were doing for years. The interesting part that I found during the middle of all of this, because I saw you on Tucker Carlson as well, and you mentioned Shapiro and those guys, is a lot of people in America, because of how divisive it is here, were claiming you to be like a conservative of like, oh man, look at this conservative hero. And I don't necessarily think you were one, at least when I listened to Rogan, I think.
I mean, look, I don't mind labels. I don't mind being called a conservative. I mean, I grew up in Saudi Arabia, right? And my family is originally from Nigeria. So I often say that I'm a liberal in Saudi Arabia, a centrist in Nigeria, and a conservative in the UK or US, right?
So yeah.
So to me, these terms are kind of
ridiculous. You know, I mean, there's no intrinsic value to any of those words.
Well, they're relative. You know, they're very relative. A conservative in the UK is not the same as a conservative in the Middle East.
Right.
Like the things are at different levels. A conservative in the USA would probably be considered a liberal or a progressive in some parts of the world. And even in the UK, the word liberal in the UK kind of means something different to what it means in the US. In the UK, it's got people understand it a little bit more as classical liberal.
Yeah.
Whereas in the US, it means more, at least in this day and age, it means more like leftist. Mm. You know, it's a little bit different. So you have this weird situation where you end up with people who are called conservatives. If you think of what the word liberal actually means, a lot of conservatives sort of end up being more liberal in the true sense than many people who have the liberal name. So I don't really mind, you know, some people call me libertarian, call me conservative. I tend to call myself both.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm certainly right of center from a Western perspective. But I'm very open-minded as well. I'm a creative, I'm a musician, I'm an entrepreneur. I can understand different sides and situations. I just don't agree with everything. So I do have my views. I do have my values. And I often also say that I'm someone who's kind of just sort of stayed in place for the most part. And then the world has sort of shifted and moved. So I think there's a lot of people who maybe if in the year 2005, they would have been considered, say, liberal. And then if they just stay still and don't move, by 2021, they might be considered right wing or conservative, even though they haven't moved and their beliefs haven't changed. It's just that since in that 15 years, you know, we've got 1,000 new genders, we've got, biological males competing against biological women in sports. We've got people proposing infinite lockdowns and mask mandates and whatever. And you've got people trying to, you know, create censorship laws and all that. And the people who stand against that are now considered conservative, although I'd argue those are technically quite liberal.
Well, that's a very classical liberal ideology. We're talking about John Locke's The Rights of Man and shit like that. It's not like
exactly.
Yeah, you're right. If you do manage to somehow stay still and notice the paradigm moving around you, then it seems to betray the fact that it's all very tenuous, right? It's not really based on any kind of evidence or anything. It's just the whims of the masses. There's a great book by one of your country mates, Douglas Murray, called Madness of Crowds. If you haven't read that, I highly recommend it. Yeah, you know it.
Oh, yeah, no, great book. He's been on my podcast.
Yeah, he's great. I just read it again this past week for the second time. Amazing, amazing work. This is all ludicrous. I mean, so modern society, particularly in the West, we're basically bored housewives that are inventing problems for ourselves because we don't feel like we're suffering enough, or we don't feel like we're engaged enough, or we feel like we have to be moving forward. If there is some moral landscape, as Sam Harris defines it, where there is a definable morality at some point, or a definable goodness versus a definable evil, or whatever it is, even if it is a range of things, there has to be a period at which we reach that range, and then we just try to make sure that everybody has the same benefits of that range that we do, not to keep pushing it forward to the left or the right. There's a correct answer. And once we arrive at it, for whatever reason, as a society, we still feel like we're not doing enough. You know what I mean? And it's understandable the reason that disenfranchised minority groups would feel that way. But that feeling isn't that we need to move farther to the left or right. It's that we need to include more people into the correct answer. That is the solution to this shit, economic equality and things like that. But it's like the feminism waves, first and second wave feminism, great. Third wave feminism, and now what is being referred to as fourth wave feminism, which is basically third wave feminism, but on social media, is goddamn chaos, and it is destructive bullshit. It turned from, hey, we want equality, to, hey, we're better than men. You know what I mean? Yeah. If you think about these premises, it's women are equal to men and all the things that are good to be equal in, but better or completely absent from anything that might be negative. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like a completely asinine premise that we've somehow, and my favorite thing about this is when men in the liberal journalism field, like Ezra Klein, for example, who Douglas Murray calls out all the time. It's really funny how he lights him up. But Ezra Klein is like, yeah, you know what? Men are bad. Like if you're part of a group and somebody can convince you that you're evil just by how you were fucking born, you are a fucking piece of shit idiot, man. Jesus Christ. You're not going to survive in the wild, man.
Man,
the fuck
I once,
are you thinking?
I once had a tweet go super viral, which said something like, I wish that men would stop apologizing for being men, and I wish that white people would stop apologizing for being white because it's really cringeworthy or something like that. And it just this thing blew up. It blew up because I agree with you totally. I mean, firstly, I think that's just like a super beta male mating strategy to kind of try to throw.
That's all it is. They're just trying to get laid. Like they didn't have the money or muscles to get laid. So like, you know what I'll do? I'll fuck. You're like a fucking cuck little bitch. Man, yeah, it's so pathetic.
I'm going to throw all men under the bus to position. You know, rather than elevating myself to compete fairly, let me throw all men under the bus and paint them all as evil or potential
except for me
or whatever.
Except for
me, I am your feminist ally.
Yeah, I get it. I'm an ally. So can I see them? Can I see them titties or what?
I'm not. I mean, I don't want them voting. I don't want them driving. Matter of fact, yesterday a sofa was delivered to my house, and I looked at my wife, and I was like, "You're up, dude." Like, you know,
you wanted equality. Here it is. Bitch.
Next man up, dude. Pick that thing up above your fucking head and then take it upstairs and I will watch you the entire time. If you want me to cook something in the microwave for you, I will do that as a lady to a man because we're equal now and that's what's going to happen.
You know, what's really funny is in the middle of all this fourth wave feminism, a couple of publications did research studies on what women find attractive and their conclusion was that women find men with better jobs and money and more muscles more attractive.
Imagine
that. The ability to provide for and protect in the gender whose biological job forever has been to provide and protect.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Why would we flip? And their conclusion was like, oh, man, we really got to take a look at this.
Yeah.
No, we don't have to take a look at it. It's a goddamn quarter million years, motherfucker, of biology, you stupid fuck.
Was Rich on that list at all? Like fat wallet?
No.
Because that's usually number one. Yeah.
Money and muscles.
Oh, okay,
that's
cool.
It.
But money was one, right?
Like money and,
Yeah.
Money. Okay. Well, what do you mean, one versus two? I don't think it was ranked that way. It was just those two things stood out more than anything else.
Because I think if you were to pose that question, right, money or muscles, I would say it's probably 90-10 women would choose money over muscles. And
it depends
like,
on the age group of the
yeah.
one.
You know what? I think there's a big third one that's missing there.
Which one?
Big dicks. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge dicks. No.
status, man. Mm, status.
Yeah. Yeah. Social status. State, yeah. I mean, that's got to be part of it for sure.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, I guess there's sometimes though where it's like they come back to a one bedroom in Van Nuys. No matter what movie you've been in or whatever, they're just like, oh, shit, this is where I got to wake up? And you're like, yeah, sorry about it. By the way, you're also going to need to move your car from the street because of street sweeping at 8 a.m.
So are they even allowed to do street sweeping now? Because there's all those shanty towns in Venice.
Yeah, yeah. So they still do it, and then the fucking sweet sweepers go right up into their tents. That's true, by the way.
That's why I love our buddy over at, oh, shit, what's it called? What's the name of his Bro Bible?
Yeah, Bro Bible, yeah. Steve Francis?
Yeah, he likes to... that's what he does on street sweeping days. He just goes out there and watches people get tickets.
Yeah.
And then laughs. And it's like films himself and laughs while they're getting tickets for not moving their car because they're predators, right?
Yeah.
They don't even live in the area.
No, but they have phones. So they're good. They're absolutely good. What's it like over there? Are you in London right now?
No, I live in Southampton. Mm. So that's about 60 miles away from London, 60 miles south.
Okay, cool. How's the whole sitch in England now? Like, are you guys on lockdown and everything?
It's not good, man. It's not good. The UK is on indefinite total national lockdown.
No shit. Did they give you like an end date?
Nope, indefinite. Until our benevolent rulers decide to let us free.
No shit. Is it Boris or is it the mayor?
It's Boris.
Well, the mayor's in London. That's not.
Yeah, mayor's just London. Yeah.
Okay.
See, you got to remember with the UK is, you know, sometimes, you know, the UK is England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland. But for the most part, it's not like the states, you know, in the USA, you guys have states. So Texas can be different. The rules in Texas can be different from the rules in California, which can be different from the rules in Georgia, et cetera. Right. In the UK, it's a lot more top down. Right. It's a lot more top down. So things tend to be done on a more national level scale. So Boris Johnson can just come out there and make some announcement. And that just changes the rules for 65 million people.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, it's not good here in the UK. I am very rapidly losing any pride I had in being British. And I don't say that lightly. Like, it's an absolute mess how it's being handled. And also, it's an absolute mess the fact that so many people are okay with it.
That's the worst part for me.
That's the thing that I don't understand either. Because we were in North Carolina, and we had a governor who, Roy Cooper, believed in lockdowns and everything should be locked down and everything else. And I've said on this show a million times, I go, wait till the election. They will throw that motherfucker out of office and it'll be all over. Like, nobody wants to live like that. Sure enough, they did, and he got reelected. For the UK, it was different for you guys because Boris initially, and correct me if I'm wrong, was like, oh, no, everything's fine. COVID doesn't exist, blah, 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 blah. And then he actually got it and then ended up in, a coma for 2 weeks? And then he came out of it a changed man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's also pressure from the media, you know. I think Piers Morgan is calling more of the shots than Boris Johnson is, right? I think... people, you know, the media has put the pressure on the government and the politicians, and they just don't have the proverbial balls to push back on anything. You know, it originally the UK was going to go for this kind of Sweden approach, right? They were going to go for the Sweden approach, but due to pressure largely.
You mean
the
one that worked, right? The Swedish approach that worked? Cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, Sweden has a lower death rate than the UK, and they didn't trash basic civil liberties and.
Or their economy. Yeah.
Punish millions and millions of children in the process in order to achieve that. So in the UK, we've just kind of got a worst of every world situation. The death rate is not particular. I mean, the whole thing is, man, there's so many lies and there's so much propaganda and there's so much nonsense. Like even the numbers are inflated, right? I had COVID in January. Or at least the test said I had it, right? Maybe it was a bad flu, who knows? But I think I had COVID and I tested positive for it 3 weeks ago. If I go out and I drive my car and I crash my car tonight and I pass away, I'm going to be marked as a COVID death.
Yeah.
Because I tested positive within 28 days, right? So when they're here talking about we've had 100 and something thousand deaths in the UK or in the USA, they're talking about 450,000 Americans have died of, you know, actually it's COVID related or died with COVID, but they say it as died from COVID. So that's when you get people saying stupid things like over 400,000 Americans have died from the virus. No, they haven't. Over 100,000 British people have died from the virus. No, they haven't. People are saying these things and they're not actually true. These are propagandistic numbers.
Right. Because well, we're allowing our entire discourse and the future of all of our civilizations respectively to be decided in a pedantic argument between shitbag politicians and dishonest journalists. I mean, it's the dumbest shit I've ever seen. And by the way, we're all sitting here wondering where the, if you thought in America you were going to be sitting around wondering when your next check from the government was coming, then you don't understand what it is to be an American. You know what I mean? That is completely antithetical to everything we fucking believe in.
Man, at least you guys have a population that has that belief.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, right? jolly old Britain with its fucking socialism. I remember a joke from Bill Hicks back in 1992. I think it was Arizona Bay was the name of the comedy album he put out. And he said, yeah, somebody approached me when I was in England on my last tour about doing sponsorship for a drink. And it was just called Orange Drink. Like, what the fuck does that mean? Orange Drink. It's like the most dumb, like the UK's got this problem with socialism, right? I mean, it creeps in a lot. I think it's from the way that if you want to call it democracy, the way it developed there with it originating in a parliamentary system just to limit the power of the monarchy. And then it kind of grew from there. They never, the idea of representative democracy like we have it here, I don't think ever really became as strong a foothold there as it did in France or in the US, right? It just, it developed differently. You know what I mean? Like the different ingredients made it come out differently. And now it seems like for a while there, your population was a lot more easily controlled by fear than ours. Now it's become way worse in America. People basically only react to fear at this point. Yeah. Fear or anger, right? They're either afraid of what the government's saying or they're angry for the government lying. But it's everybody, all of these negative emotions are all originating in the same place, government and media. Two things that we should probably just go ahead and get rid of entirely, right? Like, well, we need to start this whole fucking process over. There's some quote about the Tree of Liberty.
Fuck that. Fuck that quote. I just want to party. That's it. All I want to do is party, Zuby. You were talking about Piers Morgan earlier. I read an article that said it is a possibility that they are considering him for some form of office over there, including prime minister. Is that true?
I've never heard that in my life. I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. I don't think he's interested in that either.
They said that he could run. I'm going to try to pull it up and see.
Really? I've never heard that.
Yeah. Of that he might run. And I was like, what? Yeah, because if that were to happen, it really wouldn't be much different than when Trump got elected here, to be honest with you. Like, you know what I'm saying? So when I read it, I was like, cool. I'll entertain it. I don't know how popular.
I don't know.
Is he popular there? Because he's not here.
Well, I mean, what do you mean by popular? I mean, is Donald Trump popular?
Yes.
I guess so. But
yes.
Yes, but he's also, you know, strongly vilified. So, you know, is he popular? I don't know. He's well known.
Yeah.
He's very well known. He's famous. Popular, I think, insinuates being generally liked to some degree. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that one. But I don't know. I don't know if he's planning to run for political office. But
you know what he should do?
He's been the biggest Karen of the past.
Oh yeah. He needs to get gender reassignment surgery and become a man at some point. You'd think, right?
Dude, most of the Karens in the UK are men.
It's terrible. Oh yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
Here it's middle-aged white women. It's like,
no, here it's men. It's bad.
That's interesting. Bad. So your male population is fully cucked out then, is what you're saying?
Dude, like it's bad. It's like, I already knew it was bad over the last, you know, 15 years, but now I'm just like, good grief, man. How on earth did Great Britain at one point own like 50% of the world?
Right, yeah.
You know, how did we fight in World War I and World War II, and now we've shut down a nation of 65 million people for a virus with a 99.9% plus survival rate? I saw in, I think it was it the Mail? They actually had a report, because this is just showing the dishonesty of this stuff. So do you know, so I think it was, well, I'm trying to remember the age cutoff. It was either 40 or 45. Let's say 40 to be conservative. Less than 500 people in the UK under the age of 40 with no underlying health conditions have died with COVID.
Right.
Less than 500.
Yeah.
Right. So they're throwing around this 100,000 plus number, right? Do you know the average age of death with COVID in the UK?
I think here it's like 68 or 70 in the US. 82. I don't know.
Yeah. 82 is what it is there.
Do you know what the life expectancy in the UK is?
82.
Yeah. Okay. So over 50% of the people dying, again, with COVID, not from COVID, are over the age of 82, right? This is not me saying, hey, I don't care if someone is 84 and they die of some. The point is that to shut down, to take the draconian level measures that they have taken for this is crazy. And also to remember that, you know, one of the weirdest things over the past year is people are acting like prior to 2020, nobody died.
Yeah. That
viruses didn't exist, right? We have had viruses with us from the beginning. People have been dying. I think on average, 68 million people a year worldwide die of every single year. COVID-19 was not even in the top three causes of death, I don't believe, in 2020, right? Number one, cardiovascular disease. Number two, various types of cancer. I can't remember number three off the top of my head, but you would think, given the marketing, right? This is giving all the marketing, you would think, oh my gosh, like this is the biggest thing in the world. This is the biggest killer in the world. This is the biggest killer in the country. The biggest killer in the UK of people under the age of 40 is suicide.
Right.
Yeah. It's suicide. And so what should we do? Let's lock up millions and millions of these people indefinitely. Let's stop them from going to school, stop them from going to university, stop them from going to work, stop them seeing their friends, stop them seeing their families, stop them going outside, stop them seeing people. It's like, man, I've heard of infinitely more young people who have committed suicide over the past year in the UK than who have, I don't know any who have died with COVID.
Well, that's a problem that stretches beyond just viral activity. Dude. So, in the military, for example, I lost a number of friends, over a dozen, but double that to suicide after the war, right? So the people I lost in the war don't even, I mean, it's not even close to the same amount as people who killed themselves when they came back, right? We tend to do this thing where we throw the baby out with the bathwater. We see things like masculinity and we're like, well, there's a problem with sexual assault. There's a problem with aggression, or there's a problem with like a warlike mentality, or women have been boxed out, or whatever the case is. And we want to say that masculinity is intrinsically evil. That's not true, because you don't take into account all the positive things that masculinity does, like providing for and protecting. That's the whole fucking point biologically that this exists, right? So when we do that, and we do it here as well, it is basically like a very slow form of social suicide. That's what it is. It's like you become so depressed with your surroundings that you start trying to eliminate the things that are making you depressed instead of holding on to the things that made you happy and gave you joy. It is self-sabotage, and that is exactly what's happening in all of Western culture right now. It's the dumbest shit of all time. The good news is men aren't going away. And at some point, this will all come to a head, and people that have to fold their dick in half because they can't get hard to put it in a pussy, they're going to lose that fight every single time. They'll never have, even if they have the numbers, they'll never have the power to do anything.
Yeah, and with us, I'm going to perpetuate it. Like, even when I name this episode when it goes out, I'm going to put COVID victim Zuby on here because I want people to know that you have COVID and COVID you could survivor. Fucking die.
Like, yeah, we're going to send you a sweater and it's a scarf.
He's not a survivor yet. He still has it, dude.
I beat it, man.
Oh, yeah.
Did you, though?
I wouldn't be on this podcast otherwise. Well, I don't know. Like, I mean, we're treating everyone as if they're sick.
Yeah. Put a blood sample up, smash it into the camera right now.
That's interesting.
Even if you get the vaccine, we'll still treat you as if you're sick. Even if you've got antibodies, we'll treat you like you're sick. It doesn't matter.
You don't look well to me right now. You're putting your name all over your sweatshirt and your hat to remind yourself of what it actually is. There's a lot of symptoms that you're exhibiting right now that I'm not amped about. By the way, that Piers Morgan thing was on Good Morning Britain.
That's his show.
Yeah, it's a huge show over there, I guess. 2 weeks ago, And then they asked him, Piers Morgan, if he would ever run for prime minister. The quote that went viral was, "It has got a ring to it. And can I do any worse is the real question." He says that's the real calculation for the British people as they wake up this morning to this huge campaign. Could I do any worse than Boris Johnson? So
it's good to know we aim high, right?
Yeah. Could it be a joke? Could it not be a joke? Could he do any worse?
To the bottom.
You would only, you'd be the only one who knows that, you know?
Well, I mean, we, you said, could we do worse? We always like to aim high. Zuby, you said that. We chose between a guy that locked himself in his basement, had 47 years of access to the highest levels of government, and managed only to author the crime bill and, according to him, the Patriot Act. And then we had a reality TV star that can't stay off fucking Twitter. So, no, we're not aiming high.
Yeah, we're. I think we're all done aiming high. And if it was you, between Boris and Piers Morgan...
This is just the capital from Hunger Games. That's all we're doing now.
Maybe that's when I need to step up. And, you know, I've got people on Twitter every day telling me I need to run for prime minister. But maybe if the options are like that, then maybe it's my...
Yeah, you should do that. And anybody that doesn't vote for you, just call them racist.
Exactly. And transphobic.
Yeah.
And sexist and misogynist. Exactly.
Now, you said...
First black transgender woman.
One of the things you said is that they're still treating everybody like they're sick. And you mean it in a practical way insofar as... You're still being treated as though you have COVID, regardless of what status you happen to be in that paradigm. But we're treating everybody like they're sick because everybody has a victimhood mentality now. It's not just the practicality, or it's not just the practical version. It is the social version as well. We're treating everybody are you okay today? Like I'm supposed to just feel the best I've ever felt 24 hours a goddamn day, all week, all month, all year. Like that's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Life is life, goddammit. Live your fucking life and stop worrying about how you feel about shit all the time. Motherfucker, what is wrong with people, goddammit?
It's not going to change.
Do you know what? I was thinking this when you were talking about sort of like suicide on a national level, like sort of this collective suicide. And that's something I've thought about a lot, actually. I kind of have a theory on it, which is that, and I think this is, if you look at it both on an individual or on a national level, I mean, it's interesting. So firstly, suicide is a bit of a first world problem, right? If you actually go to developing countries, so-called third world countries, where people have real, real like struggles and problems just for basic survival, suicide rates tend to be very, very low, right? People die of other things, but they're certainly not offing themselves. And then if on a national level, if you look at countries that are actually more affluent, whether it's Japan or it's the USA or it's the UK, suicide rates are higher. And not only that, they tend to be higher amongst, I think, upper classes, right? So people who are actually earning more money are more likely to commit suicide, I believe. Someone can double check me on this, than people who are actually less well off. And it seems like suicide is almost a... It seems like when people... And I think this plays into the whole victim mentality and oppression Olympic stuff as well, is it seems like when individuals or societies do not have those real existential struggles, you know, fighting to get enough food to survive and to get shelter and to do this and to do that, and they miss that purpose and meaning, then I think suicidal tendencies rise both on an individual level, but also on a national level, right? I think that the UK has been so comfortable for so long. The USA has been so comfortable for so long. Canada has been so comfortable for so long that people are, you know, people are developing pathologies almost, right? They're creating things that are imaginary, right? I've never heard of white supremacy more than I have in the past 3 years,
right?
Despite the fact that white supremacy virtually is non-existent and it is certainly not tolerated in any of our countries. So people have to change the definition to just mean like, oh, like, just being white makes you a white supremacist right? You know,
it's not enough to not be racist. You have to be anti-racist.
Exactly. That's right. You know, did you see the thing of multiracial white supremacy? Did you see that one?
Oh, no. Yeah. God damn. Oh, was it? Yeah. What the fuck?
Multiracial.
There's always the multiracial white supremacy will get you.
Yeah. You know, I think it was someone trying to explain the rise in Trump votes from Black Americans, and they put it down rather than, you know, looking at policies.
People care about the economy. People, that's it. Most 80% of people vote because of the economy. Now, one new bit of information, we talked about this with Sorbo the other day, I think. One of the reasons that I personally believe Trump lost is because old white Republicans didn't vote for him the way they normally do. And when I say we, I mean the people that are into politics here, think it's because of his flippancy about COVID and the fact that he was making fun of Biden for being old all the time. Mm. They took that personally. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That makes sense to me, but black and brown people and anybody that's genuinely disenfranchised only cares about not being disenfranchised anymore. They don't give a fuck about any of that other stuff. They're not worried about their feelings. They're worried about food on table. The end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
A lot of people, I think a lot of people are worried about their feelings.
Well, yeah. The people that don't need food are, like you said before, yeah, that's how it works, right?
Yeah. Hot Bob, hang on. What were you going
to... I just wanted to fact check the suicide thing.
Yeah.
I did look it up. It is more prevalent among, quote unquote, working class people.
So is it? Okay.
So you could call it middle class still, but it would be the lower side of that.
That's fair.
But there's plenty of examples. I mean, look, like Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain, all of these musicians
maybe it gets skewed because the ones you hear about tend to be people who are kind of at that.
But it's certainly true. It's certainly true that people that are in what you would call dominant majority population. So men, for example, commit suicide at 3 times the rate that women do.
Yes.
Whatever that is, I don't know what it is, but there's a book that Murray talks about all the time called The Curse of Self. That's really good. That if you haven't read, you should probably look into. It's about how whenever human beings became sentient and realized that they were an individual, we've not handled that information very well. You know what I mean? Like we really have not processed that in a very good way. A lot of philosophers have tried and we've murdered them for it. Whether it be Gandhi or Jesus or whomever else, like these people were probably as deeply flawed as any other human being that existed. MLK as well. He was dropping loads at any girl he could find, but had some meaningful things to say and made a lot of progress in this country. We've not handled the concept that of the self very. What does it mean? Like, what is my, now that I understand that I am a fucking autonomous human being, what is my responsibility now? Most people have seemed to revert to the base level where I have to take care of myself. Right? It's fight or flight, right? It's that base instinct where the real discovery there should be like, oh shit, I'm a person. Oh shit, they're people as well. The second thing we should have realized after realizing that we're people is that these are also people. And every fucking pain I feel, they feel. Every joy I feel, they feel, right? That is the thing that makes us a society. It's the reason that we've continued to progress this far is because enough people, a critical mass of people, have continued to buy into the fact that we are responsible for one another. Now, we've gone completely overboard where not only do people not care about one another anymore, they fake it. That's way worse than just not caring. Fake it, pretending you care about somebody gives them the hope that you're fucking coming to help them. Mm-hmm. If you're the Democratic Party in America and you're talking to Black America, disenfranchised and poor and treated unfairly by law enforcement in a lot of senses back in the day, not so much anymore as it used to be, but the criminal justice system has been pretty harsh on them. You feel like, oh, these Democrats are saying X, Y, and Z. I'm going to vote for them because they're going to fix it. Well, it's been 45 fucking years. You know what I mean? What exactly are you fixing and how? Giving people that hope and then ripping that rug out from under them is probably one of the most evil things perpetrated against any minority group in the history of this country since slavery and the genocide of the natives. You know what I mean? It's fucked. And we're not even allowed to talk about that out loud. There are people on the left that are intersectional, that are fucking minority group advocates that are championing Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Are you fucking kidding me with that? I mean, that is goddamn...
That blew my mind, man. That blew my mind.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And that's how I know that everybody's full of shit. I don't take any of those people. Anybody that... Yeah. Just ask them. I've been saying this since fucking early last year, whenever Biden got nominated. Tell me why you voted for Joe Biden in a phrase does not include the words Donald or Trump.
Yep.
Go ahead. I'm listening. Not one motherfucker has ever made any kind of even reasonable, much less compelling argument to that, except for we don't want Trump in there.
Yeah, it was your election was just a referendum on Trump. That's all it was.
It's so
it was a referendum on Trump. It wasn't you know, and
which is kind of understandable. He's kind of a cunt, to be honest. But I mean, you still have to, even though he's a cunt, you have to look at the. Are you voting with your feelings, really? Are you voting with your feelings?
Most people do, man. People are in their feelings, you know. Like I think, you know, obviously I'm not American. I don't, but like I tell people straight up, I was like, yo, if I was American, I would have voted for Trump 2016 and 2020, hands down. I wouldn't even have had to, you know, think that hard about it, right? I thought his opponents were trash. And because I'm looking at policies, right? Mm. Other people are like, oh, but Zuby, like he once said this mean thing, or look at this tweet. I'm like, I don't really care about the tweets. I'm looking at his policies and I'm looking at results. And I'm also looking at the other options, right? I'm not someone who's like, oh yeah, Trump is this perfect. Trump is deeply flawed, obviously, like, clearly. But prior to the whole COVID situation, the USA by most measures was flying, right?
It was rolling, baby.
Things were going really well, right? Unemployment was very
gas
low.
Was down, unemployment was down, cocaine was cheaper.
Yeah.
And it wasn't it stepped on, like, dude, people were raging, and then all of a sudden COVID hit, and then all the fun stops, and it's like, well, fuck.
Yeah. And then they use that to get him out as well.
I know. Are they gonna do that over there with Boris?
Man, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a couple of years before there's another election, but I'm not going to be in the UK by then.
Really? Where are you going to be at? You think you'll be over here?
I'm not going to be in the UK by then, man.
Don't.
Oh, he's going to the moon with Elon, buddy.
Yeah. With AMC, with Game Stonks, dude. You're going to the moon. whatever you do, don't move to Pennsylvania. Man. Oh,
okay, I wasn't planning on it.
Yeah.
What are they fracking their mountains again? What's happening?
No, dude. Did you hear about the double murder with the and the murder suicide for snow shoveling? That was a rad one, man.
Well, I know when I lived in Madison, Wisconsin, you would get fined by the city if it's you have 12 hours after the snow stops to shovel the fucking sidewalk out in front of your house. I'm like, what exactly am I paying taxes? Not only am I paying taxes for some asshole to clean these streets and make them. Okay.
Yep.
If I don't go out and do their job for them, I still get fined.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, on this one, there was a couple. It was a man and his wife shoveling snow into their neighbor's yard. And the neighbor comes out and was like, yo, what the fuck? They were like, what are you going to do about it? And he goes, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do about it. Walks into his house, gets a gun, comes out, shoots them both. What? And then, and they were still alive. So the beauty of it was homeboy was just like, I'm not done here yet. I'm going to go back inside, grab the old AR-15 and then finish them off. And then he shoots the wife first, but before he shoots her, and they have this on video, he says to her, you should have kept your mouth shut. Classic Pennsylvania. We got a guy that works here, fake Dan behind the monitor here. Classic Pennsylvania. And then he follows the dude back inside and ices him.
No witnesses. Brother.
Well,
except for the ring camera. Well, of course.
Except for the ring camera and everybody else's camera. But the wild shit here is the media was like they had an autistic son and he murdered him in front of the autistic son or whatever, right? They started it, first of all. Clearly, people are at a breaking point with COVID and everything else. And then homeboy goes back inside his house and blows his brains out. Suicide. Well, you're thinking about the murder trial and everything
else. Yeah, it's an open and shut case. At least he saved the government some money on the trial, right?
Man,
Man, that's just intense. I did hear about the guy who went into the Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles and they didn't serve him because he didn't have a mask on. And he went and came back with a gun and held up the place and stole chicken, pancakes, and syrup.
To be fair, have you been to Roscoe's?
That's the first arm. look, Roscoe's.
Justified.
Roscoe's is really good.
Justified.
I haven't, but it must be good, man.
So good. If you go to LA, there's a line every fucking time. And yes, as soon as you have it, you'll know why. Like, I understand.
It's good. And if you go to Oakland, there's a place called the House of Chicken and Waffles down at Jack London Square that used to be a Roscoe's. Yeah. Also great. Okay. There's something about chicken, waffles, syrup, butter, and hot sauce that tastes really good together.
Yeah.
I think it's just poverty. It's what it tastes like. I grew up poor. I'm like, just throw some fucking Spam and Kraft singles on this too. Let's just do the whole thing.
But here's the thing. Like, if I was near the end, right? And I was like, man, I don't want to live anymore. I'd go out like that, you know? I'd start picking off my favorite places. I definitely wouldn't wait in line.
This is probably the first armed robbery of syrup in history.
I love the mention of syrup.
When I was reading the story, I loved the mention of syrup.
That's really fucking funny, actually. I mean, it's not funny that he did violence.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look.
He didn't hurt anyone. Like, if someone had actually gotten hurt, you know, that first story, I'm like, not funny. Three people died.
Yeah.
That story, I'm like, there's something funny in this. Like, there's something funny about, you know, I'm like, man, like, you should have just served him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if he came back wearing a mask or not. But,
well, here's the thing. The wife did scream out, because I have the dialogue here. She says, you're the fucking scumbag. You don't know how to talk to somebody. And then the husband said, that's right. You're a pussy, a fucking pussy. You're a pussy. Clearly he wasn't, because he went back inside. And
well, I mean, no, that's not true. A pussy would go inside and get a gun. Somebody that really believed in what they were saying will come out there and fucking throw hands with the guys.
Dan, I'm gonna
he's got a fucking snow shovel.
Gonna be honest with
you,
though.
Have a snowball fight. Be a fucking man.
It's cold, dude. You want to end that job as quick as you can.
No.
I don't want to be out in the cold any longer than I have to be. I'd rather suicide myself inside my own house.
Like, we've made the penalty for punching somebody in the face too close to the penalty for murder.
Yeah.
Like, if you, let's say you commit murder and it's not first degree, it's second degree murder. So somebody pisses you off, you pull out a gun and smoke them without premeditation, you're going to get maybe 8 to 13 years and serve 60% of that if you were nice to people in prison. Probably, right?
Somewhere.
It's about in that range.
That's not very long.
If I punch somebody in the face and fracture their skull, I'm going to do like 5 years, 3 to 5 years in prison.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's too close.
Too close.
It is too close together.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, dude. You should be able to punch people in the face whenever you want. Here's what I think, that bullying is really important. I think it's an important part of developing, not caste-based or class-based or racially-based or gender-based hierarchies, but fucking just establishing the standard that words have consequences. That's why I've started a nonprofit where I go around and punch children in the face. Now, it's not really a nonprofit.
He's doing it for profit, obviously.
Yeah, it's for profit. I'm getting paid.
Just for anyone listening, Zuby does not condone of these.
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that.
Zuby, you're fine.
He said offline that he was going to send me money. Anyways, so their parents pay me to beat the shit out of them.
Yeah,
it's like that movie Dirty Work with Norm Macdonald, except for parents pay me to beat up their kids.
Yeah,
because they can't beat them up. If you beat them up, you lose your kids. You go to jail, maybe. I beat him up. It's just like, this guy's kind of an asshole.
100%. And I've actually got a true story for you. This is dead serious.
Yeah, none of that was true that I just... I don't
want to know what he said. What I'm about to say actually is, and this happened like 2 nights ago, right? I'm at a restaurant here. We're in Austin, Texas. They put... some of these restaurants put playgrounds with the restaurants, which is the most genius move of all time. Because if you're a parent, you just want to have some beers and some
wine. Oh, you're
at
that Mexican place?
Correct.
That place is dope.
And then you just let them run around on the playground, and then they come back and eat, and you can have a nice night out with people and blah, 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 right? Well, I took my kid to... He's six. Like, the nicest kid in the world. You guys have all met him here, obviously. Super nice. We're almost like nothing alike. Like, he's so nice to people, where I'm just kind of a dick all the time. But regardless, at like 4 years old, I have been taking him to jiu-jitsu just in case anything happens. Hey, man, you'll know how to take care of yourself. I think it's a great sport, and it helps him out, right? A bully was picking on him on the little playground at the restaurant, you know, and he looks over at me and he comes over and he goes, Dad, this guy's bullying me. And I go, well, you know what to do, and this is why you're in class for shit like this. Like, I love you, and I can clearly see that you're not in the wrong here. Sure enough, kid pushes him, dude. My kid rolls him over, chokes him out on the playground, and it's it. You know, the kid stood up, apologized. They moved on. They shook hands, and then they played together for the next hour and a half.
I mean, how many times is a child?
It doesn't happen very often, and it's
between the ages of like 5 and 12. How many minor scuffles did you get in?
A million. Yeah, I can't even name it.
Like one a week in primary school.
Yeah,
right.
It's healthy. It's healthy.
As
long as it doesn't go too far.
Exactly.
Right. It's healthy. It's necessary.
Yeah.
That conflict resolution at a young age, especially, is so important. Jordan Peterson talks about it all the time. I don't remember the exact quote he uses. I'm paraphrasing, but it's something to the effect of, if we're not allowed to fight with our words, then we're going to end up fighting with our fists. If we're not allowed to fight with our fists, we're going to end up fighting with guns and bombs. You know what I mean? We're trying to avoid this shit. So why don't we have a conversation? You know, if the conversation doesn't work out, we'll punch each other in the face for a while.
Yeah, and you notice Jordan Peterson didn't say snow shovels. No, because you don't do that. It's too cold, man. You go in and get the gun.
I wasn't saying they should have had a snow shovel fight. They could have had a snowball fight, or they could have just slapped each other around. You seen that Russian sport?
Yeah,
where they just slap each other in the fucking face.
Yeah, that's
what we should start doing.
I haven't.
Oh, dude, you gotta look it up. Russian slap fighting. Look it up. It's basically it's like an arm wrestling table where they have the thing you hold onto but instead of that, you both hold onto it and you just slap each other right in the fucking face.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there's this one guy whose hand is about the size of this fucking whole desk.
Mm-hmm.
And he just rocks people on a regular basis. Wow. The funniest shit I've ever seen.
And what, you try to guard with your hand as well?
No. Or? No, you just have to stand there and take it.
You have to stand there and take it. And if you, because most of them end up getting knocked out. Like,
that's how it ends. Yeah, it goes until somebody gets knocked out.
A slap is hard, man.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's okay.
And then when you get knocked out, you help the other guy up and then you move on with your day. And I think that's a lot better than than this.
I mean, I got other ways of handling things. But, you know, like if that works in Russia, then.
Yeah. You're
drinking
good.
Drinking and slap fighting.
Do you what? Like, so you said you've been writing songs since what, 2006, give or take? I mean, probably before that, but you got into it in 2006.
Yeah, I started writing in 2005. I released my first album in 2006.
Okay, and now what's your? I haven't had a chance to listen to any of your music. Is it like a classic UK style rap? I mean, there's a very specific style of beat over there.
Yeah, no, it's not. Maybe you're thinking like grime kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, I'm not a grime artist. No. Okay, my music sounds more like. My music sounds more like American hip hop.
Okay,
I was gonna say because you don't really have an accent that much either.
No, I didn't grow up here. I didn't grow up here.
Well, you grew up in Saudi Arabia, but did you grow up in like one of those American expat neighborhoods or whatever? Because
for the most part.
Yeah, those are. I mean, there's some nice neighborhoods over there. They get mm-hmm. a little dangerous from time to time, depending on the attitude.
Dangerous? Oh no, not at all.
Well, the ones that are not the ones that the oil executives live in, but the ones that the ones that government families live in sometimes get a little problematic.
Well, I was in the former. I was like, yeah. I lived in the safest community you can imagine. Zero crime.
Right. Yeah.
Literally
zero. It is actually really nice over there. Yeah.
They don't. And you guys don't have guns over there. It's just knives. There's a bunch of knife killings, right?
Where?
In England? Yeah.
Knife crime is more of an issue, but you know, murder compared to the US is way lower, just period.
I'm sure.
Yeah, we enjoy it over here.
How are you with a knife, Zuby, just in case, you know?
I've never really thought of the necessity of needing to knife somebody, to be honest. You know, worst came to worst, and you know, I had to protect my life or a loved one, then you know. I do what I have to, but like my brain doesn't generally go there.
Yeah, because like watching the NWA doc right over here or the biopic, none of those guys like were really into guns, and then they were like, "Hey man, gangster rap," and then all of them were carrying fucking AKs and shit like that. I wondered if you just rapped about it over there, of like, "Man, I knife this motherfucker just because I could."
Screw all that. I don't rap about anything remote.
Do you
like
think
that is
something that's something that is very different about American versus British culture? These cousins, as we like to call them. There was something about shedding the monarchy early on in our existence that really pushed home the idea that we need to be prepared to fight our government at some point, even when it seems ridiculous as a premise. Like in the 1980s, that was not something that anybody needed to worry about. In the 2020s, it's looking more and more likely like government overreach is going to, you know, come to some kind of head. But I don't feel like you guys have ever felt like that over there. Not in a long time, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, it amazes me that more British people do not understand the Second Amendment. Like, I'm super pro First and Second Amendment, despite being a British person. But, you also have to remember that, firstly, it's weird that people don't understand it over here in Europe, given that, you know, this is where Nazism rose.
Seriously.
And this is where Stalinism and communism rose. Yeah. So the whole, I don't know why British people like to laugh at the notion of a government becoming tyrannical, because I'm kind of like, I can show you a couple examples in the last 80 years.
Yeah.
So I don't know why people find it so far-fetched. But also, you know, one of the biggest differences culturally and politically between the US and the UK and most of Europe, in fact, is the whole concept of rights, right? So if you are certainly a more right-leaning American, you know, maybe, you know, some of the lefties don't really believe in this anymore over there, but the notion of where rights come from. So in the UK and in most of Europe, the government gives you your rights. That's what most people implicitly understand. They don't really think about it, but that's just how the average British person is wired. The average Swedish person is wired. My rights come from the government, right? So the government could give me rights. The government can take away my rights. Whereas in the USA, you guys have the whole notion of negative rights, right? Your rights come from God and are inalienable. And the government is there to protect, right? The Second Amendment isn't, we're giving you the right to bear arms. It's, we shall not infringe on your God-given right to bear arms.
Right.
And a lot of people, I think it's a lot easier to understand the differences between the UK and America and the people and the sort of attitude if people understand that concept. Because I think the, you know, the left wing in the USA is trying to make the USA more like Europe, right? That's really what they're pushing for, whether you're talking about nationalized healthcare or you're talking about infringing more on the Second Amendment or perhaps making some limitations on the First Amendment. All the, they're looking at Europe and they're going, let's be a little bit more like Sweden. Let's be a little bit more like the UK. Let's be more like that. And as someone who is not an American, but who is a big fan of the way the USA does a lot of things, I think the USA, the sort of Constitution and Bill of Rights, I know that these things were not from the very beginning applied equally to all citizens, obviously, but I think the sort of concept there is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right? I think I look at the USA and I'm like, that's the one, the USA is the only country in the world that got the freedom of speech thing right.
Yeah. It's
as far as I'm aware.
I mean, the founding documents of this country, regardless of how they were even immediately selectively applied, are, in my opinion, almost beyond reproach. The idea behind it. So I always say this: America is not a geographical location. It's not a set of people. It's certainly not a race. I wouldn't even say it's an ethnicity or a nationality. It is, to me, an idea that I should be left alone to do what I want, provided I don't hurt anybody else. And I should, the expectation from my side is that I'm doing everything I can to help the people in my country and my country at large. That's the social contract that those documents imply. You know, it's funny you bring it up because for you guys, it kind of started with the Magna Carta, right? But even back then, it only applied selectively to lords and governors, white landowners, right? In the same way that here, the Constitution really only applied to white male landowners. That was it. Women and anybody that wasn't white could get fucked. I mean, if you're a white, if you're an Irish person that didn't own any land in this country, you didn't vote for George Washington. You weren't allowed. That's not how that worked, right? Like, that, what is it, like 80,000 people voted in the first election or something like that? It was ridiculous.
I don't even know. I wasn't alive then.
And then if you pay attention to the way that vote happened, the first three presidential elections were completely rigged by Alexander Hamilton. Like, he was working behind the scenes. The first election, they wanted to make sure that George Washington was unanimously selected. They thought that was really important in the same way that they would not sign the document breaking part with the UK unless it was unanimous. That's why New York actually sat out the vote. They said they weren't going to vote. They didn't show up that day for the vote because they couldn't get permission from their constituency to come vote yes.
Is that in the musical with Lin-Manuel Miranda?
No. It's funny. Alexander Hamilton was a huge piece of shit. Like a giant piece of shit. There was a hothead. He was in fights all the time. He was just like in gunfights all the time. But yeah, he conspired behind the scenes to make sure that John Adams got elected second.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to hold on to power. And when Adams started fucking bucking Hamilton's power after George Washington died, then he made sure Adams did not get a second term. Even though he put his mortal enemy, Thomas Jefferson, into power by doing that, he still made that happen. So we like to act like now there's all this integrity. Like, back in the day, it used to be so integral and everybody was fucking blood. No, it's, this country's been a fucking shit show from the very beginning. Forget all that stuff. It's not about the practice or exercise. It is about that idea that I can say whatever the fuck I want and I have, and I can pursue liberty in the way that I feel I should be able to. And that if the government gets in my way, then I am armed to protect myself against that. That's how this whole thing was set up.
Yeah, and you're not in any of that right now. I mean, you guys are in infinite or indefinite lockdown. I mean, I don't even know what the fuck that means, dude. Man. Like, what do you guys say behind the scenes to each other?
Man. I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend that like everyone is okay with it, but more people are, like, there are people who want the restrictions. There is a significant number of people, might be up to 60% of people in the UK, who think that the restrictions are not strict enough. Right. They want more lockdowns. They want more. And
how are people are paying to live, though, is what I don't understand.
Oh, the government is floating magic money.
Oh, they are. So people are getting paid over there? Magic.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, so this is probably not going to be any inflation, right? Probably
this
not.
Is the problem. People are being kept docile because they're artificially, you know, paying a lot of people. People who aren't able to work in most sectors, they're paying them 80% of their salary, I believe, and have been through all of these lockdowns.
No
so,
shit.
Yeah. So it's like a perverse incentive. So it's like hush money, right? It's like hush money. So a lot of people don't really want this law. A lot of people kind of like this lockdown. People who don't travel anyway, they didn't like their job to begin with. They're kind of lazy. They don't really want to do much anyway. So they're kind of chilling. You know, they're not running businesses. They're not the ones getting hammered by all of this stuff. So, you know, it's okay for them. People in the media, it's fine for them. Politicians, it's fine for them. But someone like me, it just offends my sensibilities to the core. I mean, when you guys were just talking about, you know, your First Amendment rights and you're saying, I was like, man, I'm feeling like jealous out here.
Well, yeah. here's what we can do.
I can get arrested for a tweet, bro. Yeah, I can get arrested for a tweet.
But at 80%, yeah. I'm looking at a lot of people we work with behind the camera here, and I think they'd take it. Like at 80%, shit. Yeah. You don't have to show up and do anything. If I worked at TJ Maxx and you made me that deal, I'd be like, fuck yeah, dude. I'm not going into TJ Maxx.
I don't think a British dude knows what a TJ Maxx is.
Yeah, it's just called TK Maxx in the US.
Is it really? Yeah. Are you a little Maxinista like myself?
What the fuck does that mean?
No, I didn't even know that was a word.
Yeah, I just made it up.
Yeah, now. I don't think it is. Since you're technically a woman now, you can come here. You and I can get married, and I'll sponsor your citizenship, and you can just live in Texas, man.
It'd be great. Yeah. We'd love to have you, Zuby.
Then you could run for governor of Texas.
Yeah. Now's the point in the show. We get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to, Zuby?
Wow. You mentioned him earlier. I'll say Jordan Peterson because he's a G.
He is he's one of the most important human beings alive right now, to be honest. I really do believe that. I think he might be like a modern day Jesus.
I wouldn't go that far.
That's Jesus Christ, Dan.
I wouldn't go that far.
Why would you? There's no evidence that Jesus was God, but look at the works. Look at the things that he said. He stood up for the individual's right. Instead of being part of the establishment, he said, hey, these people that I am most closely associated with, these Pharisees and Sadducees that are running the Jewish religion in my hometown right now, are pieces of shit. They're ripping people off. They're doing weird shit. They're fucking selectively applying laws. So I'm going to go in there and flip their fucking tables over. People look down on these caste minorities like prostitutes and women and shit like that. And what did he do? He fucking made it a point to, in front of other people, show that he was on the same level, equal to those people, that their feelings and values and lives matter just as much as his. That's the lesson I learned from that. And I think Jordan Peterson is a person that is speaking to common sense and reason right now. Let's not over adjust. That's the real message I hear from him. It's not that I'm not going to misgender you to be a dick about it. But if you tell me under penalty of law that I have to say something, I'm going to fight that to the death, motherfucker. You can't do that ever. Because we know where it goes, right? It's twofold. You start controlling language and what people can and can't say, and you start controlling people's ability to make their own living, and you end up with communism 100% of the time. Every single time. We've seen this fucking a million times in human history. It cannot be tolerated.
Mine is Anna Nicole Smith. Obviously, pre-clown makeup. That's when she went off the fucking rails. But old school Anna Nicole Smith was my fave. Big fan of her. But obviously this isn't about me. It's about you, Zuby. Mm. Let everybody know where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, sure thing. I'm at Zuby Music on everything. That's at Zuby Music. Definitely follow me on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. I've got my podcast, Real Talk with Zuby. You can check that out on all the usual platforms. And if you want to find my music, just search for Zuby on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen.
Man, you're a very thoughtful dude, man, and we're grateful to have you on the show today. If you're in Texas, man, stop on by. You and Dan doing a show together would be great, actually.
Yeah, are you into mushrooms at all?
Nah, man, I don't touch anything, man.
Well, no shit.
I'm straight edge.
Oh, word.
All the way around.
Yeah, not me.
I don't drink. I've never smoked. I've never done anything.
What's the craziest shit you've ever done?
I'm not telling you on a podcast.
Come on this show.
Come on, man.
I think coming on this show is right up there.
There's something dark, brother. Yeah. I bet you there's a hair doll.
You'd be surprised. I'd actually have to think about it.
He's got a really tramp stamp. That's what it is.
No tattoos either. Not a fan.
Wow. No shit. There's got to be something, dude. Is there a bag of toenails in your closet from like childhood?
Nah, no weird stuff, man. Nothing too kinky.
Bunch of little shoes.
All right.
He's got a Santa bag full of little shoes.
Yeah. If there is, there is. Obviously, we'll find out about it, Zuby. We appreciate you being here today. Check out at Zuby Music. For D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. We are the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone. First and foremost, our title sponsor, OmahaSteaks.com. Promo code Drinking Bros. Gonna get you an extra $35 off at checkout. When it comes to Father's Day, some things never change. Dads want steak. A recent survey shows 75% of Americans agree there's no better way to spend Father's Day than grilling with the family. From USDA certified tender steaks to burgers and more, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience, guaranteed to secure your spot as dad's favorite. Shop OmahaSteaks.com and give dad the legendary heartland quality he deserves. Plus, our listeners get an extra $35 off with the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. Here's what I love about Omaha Steaks. It's easy to use. Shows up right at your house. And a huge styrofoam cooler full of dry ice, even in the hot, hot state of Texas down here. It keeps it nice and cool. Shit, mine, I was gone for 36 hours, dude. And it was still great when I returned. A ton of options over there for Omaha Steaks as far as delivery goes. Now, obviously, the steaks are to die for. The fan favorite is the filet mignon, which has earned the coveted distinction of USDA certified tender, and their all new smash burgers are built for the grill, but they also carry mouthwatering chicken, pork, seafood, desserts, and easy to prepare comfort food. My wife loves the apple tart desserts they have over there, and each steak is perfectly aged to maximize tenderness and hand cut by master butchers. Omaha Steaks has been America's original butcher since 1917. They're a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. This Father's Day, give dad the world's best steak experience with Omaha Steaks. Visit OmahaSteaks.com for a guaranteed perfect gift that delivers legendary quality. And for an extra $35 off, use the promo code DRINKINGBROS at checkout. It is OmahaSteaks.com and an extra $35 off with the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. Just go ahead and see this site for details. Bravo!
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4-Day Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains June 6th through the 9th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.